make a rattling sound. I began to think this had been a bad idea, or that I should have at least waited until first light. I managed to reach the fence without the jeep breaking down, but I was dismayed to find that the gate Blake had rammed open to come and retrieve me had been mended and was once again locked. I parked and got out of the jeep, leaving the headlights on and the engine running, while I studied the gate with my hands on my hips. I could abandon the jeep and hoof it the rest of the way to Eclipse, or I could blast through it the way Blake had done, or I could give up and go home. I sighed, my shoulders sagging. I didn't like any of my options.
I knew you couldn't stay away.
The voice came from the darkness, and I almost screamed before I recognized the familiar Johnny Cash twang. Cyrus stepped into the headlight beams, fingers hooked in his belt loops, and a restrained half-smile on his face. He sauntered to the gate. My heart, which had leapt into my throat when he'd spoken, now plummeted into my giddy stomach. I barely felt my feet as they moved me toward him. We stopped with the fence between us and put our hands on the top rail, our fingers almost touching. I sensed the anima singing through him, and I wanted to lay my palms over his knuckles and drink in that awareness of his vitality, that uncanny connectivity I felt with all of the Calyptra, but most especially with Cyrus. "It's so good to see you," I said.
"It's better to see you."
Heat traveled up my neck and my skin prickled with excitement. "What are you doing here?" I asked, and he shrugged, his smile broadening.
"Waiting for you."
"Liar," I said. He put his right hand over his heart.
"Truth."
"You've been out here since I left?"
"Off and on. Mostly on."
He lowered his eyes.
"The mood at Eclipse has been unusually somber. Everyone's been sulking since you went away, including Rebecca."
"Really?" I raised my eyebrows. I couldn't imagine Rebecca sulking.
"Really,"
he said, and lifted his gaze to mine.
"But I had a feeling you couldn't stay away for long."
He reached inside his shirt, pulled the key on its leather thong over his head, and handed it to me.
"Welcome back, Kenna. Welcome home."
I would have filed the night I played in front of the folk Yeah Fest crowd and kissed Blake for the very first time, in the best night ever category, were it not for the part where I came home to find my family massacred in an insane act of revenge. But even if the double homicide hadn't happened, I didn't think that night could compete with the night I returned to Eclipse. The Calyptra, all of them night owls like me, were still awake when Cyrus and I returned. They greeted me with hugs and exclamations of delight, and even a few tears. Although Rebecca didn't literally jump for joy like some of the others, I could tell she was pleased to have me back.
"I knew you couldn't stay away for long," she said, echoing Cyrus's words, a satisfied smile on her lips as she wrapped me in her slender arms.
"It seems like I was gone for a month," I told her, closing my eyes and basking in her affection, like I'd just stepped into the sunlight after being trapped in a dank cellar for days. But a sinking despair marred my happiness, the knowledge that tomorrow I was supposed to start packing up everything I owned so Mom could put me a safe distance from the Calyptra. Rebecca seemed to sense my darkening mood. She held me back and searched my face.
"What's wrong?" she asked. "What's happened, sweet girl?"
I swallowed emotion thick as tar and said, "We're moving away. Like, as far as my mom can take us. She wants us to start over somewhere else. She didn't say it, but I think she just wants to get me away from Eclipse."
"No,"
Rebecca said simply, as though it were up to her. "It's not like I want to go. Besides, I graduate in a year. Then I'll be an adult and I can go wherever I want." Rebecca shook her head and said again,
"No, Anya is not taking you away from me. I won't allow it."
"She's my mom. There's not really anything you can do to stop her." Rebecca smiled, and a wicked glint entered her eye.
"I'll think of something. In the meantime, we'll make the most of every moment."
While Stieg and Rory stoked the bonfire, Rebecca disappeared into Eclipse House and returned with a culling jar, again wrapped in a scarf, so I couldn't see the shape of the container.
But I asked no questions, simply culled when it was my turn, and felt myself turn to fire and light and joy and life. I was electricity and sunrise, the stars and the moon tearing across the sky, a supernova exploding in beautiful chaos that was somehow harmonious. And yet I was still me, only I was me to the power of greatness and glory. All that had happened in the last 24 hours, hurting Blake, being rejected by my twin, finding out that her condition was my doing, receiving the news that my family was moving, vaporized like so much water exposed to a blast of nuclear energy. The sad, hopeless, pathetic parts of me disappeared, and the good parts were amplified to magnificence. When the music began, it hit me like a sonic boom and swelled through the night in liquid jewel waves of gold and silver, sapphire and emerald, amethyst and ruby and pearl, melting together to turn the heavens to a great, undulating opal. Sunday brought me my guitar, and I joined their circle and played so hard my fingers should have bled. The calyptra danced around us in a whirling, revolving ring. There was a manic quality to this anima high, a need to move, to create, to touch and feel and exist and be the center of everything. It made me feel like anything was possible. I could run 1,000 miles, swim an ocean, live forever. It was a familiar feeling, but at the moment I couldn't recall why I knew it, so I didn't try. Instead, I played and sang with the calyptra. I joined my voice to theirs for the first time, and I was harmonious with them. This was what I'd been missing at home, where the anima didn't satisfy and the hunger inside me for something more never abated. Maybe it wasn't the anima that was different at home. It was everything else. But now I was at Eclipse with my people, where I belonged. We joined hands and sang as we danced, switching partners, weaving through arches of arms, swaying among trailing fingers. A hand found mine and squeezed. I felt something pressed into it and looked up to see it was Joanna who had taken my hand. She released it quickly and spun away, but I found myself clutching a piece of folded paper. I slid it into my pocket without reading it. I will not let Joanna ruin my perfect night, I thought. My best night ever. And almost the instant I thought this, a strangled bleat of terror cut through the night. The music and dancing stopped, and we turned toward the source of the hideous sound. It had come from the field, halfway between the animal enclosure and the bonfire. Several pairs of eyes glowed in the darkness 100 yards away. The keening went on, and I was running, running toward those glowing eyes and that terrible cry of pain. I remembered what Cyrus had told me my first day at Eclipse, about how Bully was such a troublemaker, how he kept finding ways to escape and pillage the gardens at night, and how it wasn't safe to wander away from Eclipse alone because there were predators in the woods, wolves and coyotes and mountain lions and bears. The glowing eyes scattered when I was within 20 feet of them. I could see their shape by that point, a pack of dog-like animals, too small to be wolves. Coyotes, then. They had to be. But even if they'd been wolves, I would have charged into the middle of them, because I had a terrible feeling I knew who had made that animal squall of pain. And I was right. I fell to my knees beside the small, twisted body of the animal the coyotes had attacked. I let out a moan. It was Bully. It was my wild, troublemaking little goat. The leather collar around his neck had done a little to protect him from the coyote's teeth, but they had ripped him open in 12 other places, and he was bleeding out, his blood black in the night. His dark eyes wobbled, searching my face as though begging me to help him. And I could, I realized. I could save him just like I had saved Aaron. All I needed was the anima of some other creature, another goat, a horse or a sheep, something potent that could channel into him. Hold on, little guy, I said, taking a moment to stroke the uninjured place between his eyes to comfort him. I wish there were more anima inside me now. If there were, I could simply infuse him, but the emotional shock of what had happened seemed to have sprung a leak in me, and the last of the anima that had filled me for the previous hour came rushing out like air from a punctured tire. Resolved, I stood, ready to cull one of the other animals to save my pet. It wasn't fair to the animal whose life I would take,
but I had to do something. I couldn't let Bully die. Then I saw Rebecca and the rest of the Calyptra coming toward me through the field, carrying lanterns, their expressions somber, as though they were part of a funeral march. Rebecca held a jar in the shape of a goat's head in both hands in front of her, and when I saw it, relief swept through me. I wouldn't have to cull one of the other animals to save Bully. Rebecca would use one of her culling jars to save him. She would take care of him as she'd taken care of me after my bad trip in the forest. Her eyes, all of the Calyptra's eyes, were ink black as they formed a ring around Bully's mangled body. Rebecca, at their center, knelt in the place where I'd knelt a moment before. She opened the lid of the jar and began to chant in a low voice, in a language I didn't understand, but which I thought might be Latin. I was confused. The cloud of light that normally accompanied the opening of a culling jar didn't emerge, and neither did Rebecca's vena. Instead, Rebecca dipped her finger into Bully's blood and spread it around the rim of the jar, still chanting the same phrase over and over again, her eyes black as obsidian. And then I did see the light, the anima, only it wasn't coming from the jar. It came from Bully, oozing from his mouth and nostrils, from his bloodied wounds like smoke from the windows of a burning building. Only this cloud moved with purpose. It snaked and funneled through the air, straight into Rebecca's jar. Before I registered what was truly happening, it was too late. Bully's life slipped from his body into the jar, and Rebecca closed the lid. For a long moment, I was too stunned to react. I simply watched as the ring around Rebecca disbanded, and the Calyptra headed back to the house. Finally, I regained enough presence of mind to do something. I rushed at Rebecca and snatched the jar from her. She turned to me, her black eyes wide with surprise at my audacity. "What are you doing?" she asked coolly. "I'm putting his anima back and healing him," I shouted at her. She shook her head. "But why?" "Because he's mine. He's my pet." I realized I was crying, my cheeks soaked in tears and my chest hitching. "Oh, sweet girl," she said, shaking her head. "We don't have pets here. It's not our way." She held out her hands for me to give her back the jar. When I didn't, her mouth turned down in a scowl of disapproval. "Do you want to be Calyptra?"
Yes,
I said, my voice barely a whisper.
"Then you have to respect our practices. Not some of them. All of them. I'm sorry you grew attached to that little goat, Kenna. But his anima feeds us, and that is a worthy sacrifice for any creature."
"But I could have saved his life," I said weakly.
"At what cost?" Rebecca asked. "Why should another of the animals give its life to save this goat? Do you really think that's fair?"
I lowered my chin to my chest and shook my head.
"Then give me the jar, Kenna."
"All that lives must die," I heard Aaron say inside my head. "All that lives must die, passing through nature to eternity." I placed the jar in Rebecca's waiting hands. And for the second time in recent history, my perfect happiness was cut short, and what would have been the best night of my life was marred by death. I sank down next to Bully's body in the field and sobbed. I didn't know how long I'd been out there, but eventually Cyrus came to me and touched my shoulder.
"I should have listened to you,"
I said, my voice hoarse from crying.
"You told me not to name him, and I broke the rules. It won't happen again."
Cyrus held his hand out to me and helped me to my feet. Only then did I see Stieg and Yuri waiting nearby with shovels. Ilya and Rory, Hitomi and Sunday and Diego were there too. Their eyes had returned to normal, and I realized how terrifying they had looked with their black eyes. How inhuman. Eclipsed eyes, that was how the Calyptra referred to them. But they resembled insect eyes. Moth eyes.
"We'll bury him together," Cyrus said.
We dug a hole right there in the field and buried Bully, and made a blanket of flowers on his grave. I cried, and the girls hugged me and told me it would be okay, that all of them had been through this at one time or another.
Let's go to the dreaming tent, Hitomi suggested. We'll take Anima and get your mind off of this.
But I shook my head. I didn't want to bury my grief for Bully. He deserved better than that. It struck me then how dangerous Anima was with its ability to pull away all dark and negative thoughts. Sometimes life called for such thoughts, and while I'd been at Eclipse, I had swept mine into a safe and locked it. I started walking back to the house alone.
I just want to sleep, I said.
When I got back to my room, I climbed into bed and stared at the ceiling. I tried to close my eyes, but every time I did, I saw Bully's mangled body, Rebecca's finger dipping into his blood. I lay there, unable to sleep for a long time, as I wondered why everything good in my life eventually turned bad. The lake. I wasn't sure if I slept. At some point in the night, I closed my eyes, and when I opened them again, the sun's first rays had broken over the horizon. I was immediately aware of hunger, bone deep and urgent and not up for negotiation. My entire body felt like a mouse waiting to be fed, a stomach grinding with vacancy. Whatever anima Rebecca had given us last night, it had been potent, maybe too potent, since it had awakened the kind of torturous emptiness I hadn't felt since my first days at Eclipse. Last night I hadn't wanted to take more anima to drive away my grief for Bully. Now that sorrow was a raw wound on my heart, and it was the only thing I wanted to do. To escape the anguish of my thoughts, the dark, insistent magnet pulling me down into depression. That was what I needed. I dressed in the jeans, t-shirt, and sweater I'd worn the previous night, and headed out to Cyrus's private wagon. It had been a gift from Rebecca, he had told me once. Though when I asked him why she gave it to him, why he of all the Calyptra lived outside of Eclipse House, he merely grinned and said,
"Because I'm her favorite. Or at least I was until you came along."
That had made me blush with pride. Then I thought of my mom and how she was, undoubtedly, Rebecca's favorite at one time. Still, that hadn't stopped Rebecca from turning her back on her only daughter completely when she defied Rebecca's will. I'd thought Rebecca's love for me seemed unconditional, but there was definitely one condition, that I follow her rules down to the letter. I sniffed and wiped my eyes, fighting back tears as I knocked on Cyrus's door. I figured he'd already be awake, but it took him several minutes to finally answer. He wore jeans but no shirt, and his shaggy hair was a silky, sleep-tousled mess. His caramel-colored skin practically glowed in the early light of the sun, and his eyes were iridescent and dazzling.
"Morning," he
said, grinning sleepily and rubbing his eyes like a little boy waking on Christmas morning. He stepped back, opening the door wider. I hesitated. I should probably just go. My mom is going to freak out when she finds I'm gone. Actually, she probably already knows. She's an early riser.
If she's already going to be angry with you, you might as well make your time here worth it, Cyrus reasoned.
He made a logical point, and the thought of going home and starting to pack up my stuff made my heart feel like giving up. Despite what had happened last night, I still loved Eclipse and the Calyptra. I'd made a mistake getting attached to Bully, but it was a mistake I wouldn't make twice. I wanted to be worthy of the Calyptra and of Rebecca's affection. I stepped into the wagon and gazed around. There wasn't much to the small living space, but I could see now why Cyrus had decided to make this his place instead of the house. It was incredibly cozy, with intricate woodworking on the ceiling panels and cupboards. The polished plank floor was covered in colorful rugs, and the bed at the back was an inviting jumble of quilts and blankets. It smelled like Cyrus, like leather and sandalwood and spices. Cyrus closed the door, and what had been a cozy space suddenly became scarily intimate.
"What do you think?"
he asked from behind me. I was afraid to turn around. He was standing that close. The heat reached out from his body to mine. I eyed the tangle of blankets and thoughts of him and me wrapped together in his bed flashed through my mind. "It's nice," I said, keeping my back to him and leaning against the long counter jammed with candles, copper pots, and ceramic dishes. "Very, private." Cyrus moved toward me and put a hand on my hip. Where he touched me, it burned. I began to feel out of breath, like I used to when an asthma attack started. Only this was both scary and exciting. Had I felt this way with Blake, too? Was my attraction to him as powerful as it was to Cyrus? Yes. No. Yes. Maybe. My mind was too foggy to recall. My eyes darted around, searching for an escape, even though I wasn't sure I wanted one. There was a small round table up against one wall. On it sat a basket that contained a variety of objects. A packet of guitar strings, a wallet that didn't look at all like something Cyrus would carry, or even need to carry. A Leatherman tool with the initials ATP engraved on the outside. Was that some relic from Cyrus's former life? Was Cyrus his real name? Or had he simply bought the Leatherman from a second-hand store or a pawn shop? My gaze moved upward and landed on a piece of art hanging on the wall over a small round table. It was some kind of cutout in the shape of an eclipse moth. Instinctively, I reached for it and took it down from the nail on which it hung. There was a string attached to the back. It was a mask, I realized. Where the black moons on the eclipse moth's wings should have been, there were holes for eyes to look through. I remembered Sunday's hidden paintings, depicting people wearing moth masks, and I shuddered. "What's wrong?" Cyrus asked close to my ear. I held the mask up to my face and looked through the eye holes. It didn't mean anything, I told myself. It was just a mask. So why did it leave me feeling unnerved? I removed the mask from my face and hung it back on the wall. "Nothing," I said, turning to face him. "Nothing is wrong."
"Then spend the day with me," Cyrus said,
his voice a rumble that called to mind impending disasters, earthquakes, and landslides. His neck was so close to my eyes I could see his pulse ticking away, feel his energy, his anima, a subtle vibration. His right hand stayed on my hip, and his left rose to my chest, where he flattened it above my heart, which was thudding hard and fast. He smiled at me.
"Your heart's racing."
Then, suddenly, he lowered his hands and stepped back. I braced myself against the counter, not trusting my legs. Last night I had buried my pet, and now I was simmering under Cyrus's touch. But I had to stop thinking of Bully as mine. He was just an animal. He was just an...
"Spend the day with me," Cyrus said again.
My chest was still heaving as I responded with, "What did you have in mind?" How much farther? I stopped hiking long enough to guzzle water from the canteen Cyrus had brought. When he'd suggested a walk in the forest, I'd almost balked, remembering the last time I'd been in the woods around Eclipse, when I'd seen, no, hallucinated, the moth creature. The illustration I'd found online of the massive moth feeding on its bound victim floated to the surface of my brain, but I did my best to drown it. I'd been expecting a leisurely stroll, but the path Cyrus chose was more of a climb. We culled anima from various sources along the way, flowers and plants and even a few insects, and the voice of my grief for Bully became a distant echo. I breathed easier and my heart stopped aching. Still, none of the anima we took came close to satisfying the craving in me for more of what we'd taken last night.
"We're almost there," Cyrus told me. "There's something I want to show you. I promise it's worth the trek."
I nodded and tried to concentrate on not twisting an ankle or getting jabbed in the eye by a branch. The mossy trees were so thick they allowed no light, only cool, dank shadows, which made it hard to see whether I was about to step on unstable earth. I was so focused on the ground in front of my feet that I didn't notice when the forest suddenly cleared. I heard the drone of rushing water and felt sunlight warm my cheeks and shoulders. I raised my eyes and gasped. We stood on a rock outcropping overlooking a hidden lake. A river poured over steps of rock leading down from the mountain, feeding the lake, its water clean and clear enough to see all the way to the bottom. I spotted fish darting over the rocks, swimming their haphazard zigzag path. At the head of the lake, a short waterfall dove 30 feet to churn the otherwise calm surface. Massive trees grew so densely around us that they seemed like a natural barrier, a wall to guard a place too perfect to be disturbed. The anima I'd taken during the hike had dissipated, but even with my natural, unenhanced vision, this was one of the most breathtaking places I'd ever seen.
"Behold, my lady," Cyrus said, holding his arms out wide. "Your own private lake."
I moved to the edge of the rock outcropping, which had been painted with the design of interlocking moth wings. I peered over the edge and experienced a wonderful sort of vertigo, a dizzying urge to let myself fall into the blue. Erratic birdsong burst from the trees, calls and answers. And there was that forest white noise, the sound that is not a sound, but is the woods themselves living and breathing, like one tremendous connected organism. I turned back around to Cyrus, a smile growing wide as wings on my face. He started to unbutton his shirt. A glow spread across my skin, and I felt that sense of vertigo again, like I was going to fall, and the fall was inevitable. I wanted to stop fighting, to let go and feel myself plummet towards something new, a whole new life, a fresh start. But starting over meant leaving some things behind. Blake's face swam into my mind, his warm eyes and his boyish smile, his sweetness and sensitivity. The way he made me feel like maybe I could live in the real world, as long as I could do it with him by my side. But what was best for Blake? Was I good for him? If I was honest with myself, the answer was no. I had hurt Blake so much already. If I let things go any further with Cyrus, there would be no going back. Was that what I wanted? To make a choice that would end the war going on in my heart? To force myself to let Blake go? I turned back on Cyrus, breath short, heartbeat a kettle drum booming against my ribs. I wasn't ready to let go. Not yet. Not when I was still torn between people I loved.
Kenna.
Cyrus spoke my name into my ear. His body was close behind mine, his oven-warm chest against my back. One of his hands settled on my left hip. The other swept my hair aside, baring my neck. I felt his hot breath against that sensitive expanse of skin, and my breath caught. Then his lips touched, and my stomach thrilled, a geyser of excitement erupting to fill me. The hand that was on my hip pulled my body more firmly against his, and I felt every curve and knot of his taut muscles against my own tensed back. His mouth trailed, wet, warm, exploring. My skin charged with sensation. "Don't let go," I warned myself as I weakened. "Don't let go." Cyrus kissed his way toward my ear, and when his teeth caught my earlobe, I gasped, my body a reactor melting down, losing control, losing the will to resist. His face nuzzled the side of my face. His hands spread like starfish on my belly. I felt the forest observing me. The birds had gone silent. I turned in Cyrus's arms. His eyes scoured me, torrid, his face slack with desire. I had never been so longed for, not by Blake or anyone. It made me feel like an animal, a beast made to act on every natural urge. Cyrus's face fell slowly toward mine, his eyes drooping closed, his lips parted, and mine mimicked his. His fingers clenched on my back, digging into my flesh until it was almost painful. His hip bones cradled mine. His mouth was a fraction of a centimeter from mine when a sudden, panicked rustling from the woods split our attention. We both whirled toward the noise and saw a flock of birds explode into the air. Something heavy shook the boughs of the trees, and then went still. I realized I was clutching Cyrus's arm like a damsel in a silent film. What the hell was that?
"Probably just a bird," he said, but his eyes were hard, staring up at the now silent leaves.
Was it my imagination, or did he seem almost as uneasy as I was? I pried my fingers from Cyrus's arm and turned to him. The night I took Midnight Glory, what I saw... I bit my lip, eyes still searching the treetops for signs of movement. My heart began to slow, and I shook my head, embarrassed. "Never mind, it's just I saw this picture on the internet and..."
"Internet?"
Cyrus blinked at me curiously. "A computer network thingy. I don't really know how to explain it. It's like where you go to find anything you ever need. Anyway, there was a drawing and some information about the eclipse moth, and it kind of freaked me out." Cyrus's brows drew together.
What did it say?
Nothing, I said quickly, waving my hand as though to clear my words from the air. It's not important. Just forget I said anything.
No.
Cyrus took hold of my wrist, his grip a little tighter than was comfortable.
Tell me.
Okay, okay. It said the Eclipse Moth was some kind of fairy tale goddess that lives on blood and grows to enormous sizes, and that, my words cut off, but what I was about to say played through my mind. And the Eclipse Moth granted powers to those who worshipped it. And that's all I remember, I said, smiling a smile I wished didn't feel so forced. Cyrus and I swam in the lake until our fingers and toes were numb and our teeth were chattering from the icy mountain runoff. The tension between us didn't dissolve, but he didn't try to kiss me again, probably sensing that my mood had changed since that disturbance in the trees. I tried to shake my anxiety, but my eyes returned again and again to the spot where the flock of birds had burst from the leaves so suddenly, clearly startled by something. But there were 1,000 things in the forest that could startle a flock of birds, including Cyrus and me. I wished I could stop thinking of what I'd read about the Eclipse Moth, but I'd never had much success at not obsessing. I tried to focus my attention on the beautiful man in the water with me, his hair and skin glistening wet and his teeth so white, and his contrasting body so brown and flexed. I wanted him. That much I could no longer hide from myself. The question was, could I have him when my heart was still divided? I loved Blake. I knew Blake. I still wanted Blake. I couldn't be with both of them any more than I could live with both my family and at Eclipse. Like Rebecca said, I could not live in two worlds. I had to choose. Teeth chattering, I was about to climb out of the lake when Cyrus grabbed my wrist and reeled me against his chest.
Are you hungry?
Starved, I told him. What did you bring?
A frying pan.
He winked at me, let go of my wrist, and dove underwater. He was under for more than a minute, and when he broke the surface, he had, clutched in both hands, wriggling and squirming, a good-sized trout, its scales silver and spotted. It looked slippery, and Cyrus could barely keep hold of it. My eyebrows went up. Of course you can catch fish with your bare hands, I said. That's totally normal. Cyrus grinned.
My normal could be your normal. It just takes practice.
The fish lashed its tail, fighting for freedom. I couldn't help but sympathize with the trout. Cyrus made a small fire on the stone outcropping that overlooked the lake and pan-fried the trout with lemon and herbs he'd brought in his pack. We ate the fish with our fingers while the fire dried us. I ran my hands over the moth wings that had been painted onto the rocks. The pigment had faded from weather wear, so the depictions appeared ancient. Who painted these? I asked. Was it Sunday? He nodded. When was that? He shrugged.
Long time ago.
How long?
Oh, I don't know. Years and years. You know, time doesn't mean much to us.
Cyrus chose that moment to go down to the water to wash out his frying pan. He remained shirtless, and I noticed for the first time a series of pale scars crisscrossing his back. I sucked in a breath. I'd seen scars like that before, but only in the movies. Usually movies about slavery or children with abusive parents. I remembered what Cyrus had told me about his mother, that she wasn't the kind any kid hopes for. I got the feeling that was an extreme understatement. Cyrus must have felt my gaze because he glanced back at me and caught me staring. He frowned and I turned my eyes away, feeling as though I'd been caught going through someone else's things. I knew Blake inside and out. The boy claimed to be an open book, not a single secret to speak of. I could guess what he was going to say before he said it. Maybe it was the fact that I knew next to nothing about Cyrus that made him so attractive to me. It was exciting, but the mystery phase couldn't last forever. Eventually, you had to find out who people really were. Cyrus began to pack up. The day was waning, but I didn't want to go yet. I put a few more sticks on the fire. Cyrus saw and smiled, pleased. He sat back down with the fire between us.
If I'd planned better, we could have stayed the night out here, he said.
His suggestion made my stomach wriggle pleasantly. Cyrus pulled his shirt on and then took a wineskin from his back and offered it to me. I took a drink, felt the wine pool warm in my belly, and passed the skin back to Cyrus. He swigged and wiped his lips with the back of his hand.
I saw you looking at my scars, he said.
I glanced away. You didn't get them at Eclipse, did you? He barked a laugh.
No, those were courtesy of my mother. She was quite the disciplinarian. Spare the rod, spoil the child. That kind of woman. I ran away from home when I was 13.
He lowered his gaze, his voice softening.
I never talk about my life before Eclipse. Barely think about it, for that matter. It's funny how you can learn to block out what you don't want to think about.
I thought about that Leatherman tool in Cyrus's wagon, and the initials engraved on it. I've never been particularly good at that, I muttered, twisting a long lock of hair around my fingers. Regular doses of enema seemed to make my hair grow faster. When I'd first arrived, my hair had barely reached past my shoulders. Now it hung halfway to my waist. Why didn't enema heal your scars? I asked.
I got them before I became Calyptra, he said. Enema can do a lot of things, but it can't take away your scars.
And how did you become Calyptra? I asked, trying to keep my tone casual with an edge of disinterest.
I know what you're up to, Cyrus said,
not fooled for a second.
Rebecca told me about your deal. There are no secrets between your grandmother and me.
Why is that?
Why is what?
Why are there no secrets between you and Rebecca? Are you saying there are secrets between Rebecca and the other Calyptra? Cyrus's face closed for a moment, became unreadable. Then he shook his shaggy hair and his mouth curved in a tight smile.
Everyone has a secret or two, Kenna. Rebecca trusts me because I've proven myself to be trustworthy. That's all.
Fine, I said, dissatisfied with his seamless answer. I pulled my knees in so I could rest my chin on them and sulked in silence, hoping that if I pouted long enough, Cyrus would give in and tell me something.
Why do you need to know so badly?
He asked, staring into the dying flames of our intimate little fire.
Is there someone you want to make Calyptra?
I almost said no, but only because I'd never considered what Cyrus was telling me. Once I did, the idea bloomed in my mind like fireworks. There was someone. My twin sister, Erin, I said. She's sick. She's always been sick ever since she was born. I turned my face away so he couldn't see the tears glazing my eyes. And it's my fault. Cyrus shook his head, brows drawn in concern.
It's your mother's fault, not yours. She made the choice for you.
Doesn't make me feel a whole lot better. I picked up a stick of firewood and peeled off a splinter. Did my mom do something when she was Calyptra? Something bad? Cyrus hesitated.
She never told you.
Maybe I haven't been entirely clear about this, but the only thing my mom ever told me was to not be Calyptra. Seeing the grave expression on Cyrus's face, I swallowed hard, bracing myself for what he was going to tell me. What? I asked. What is it?
Your mom killed someone, Kenna.
I swallowed hard, and for a moment my ears rang as though someone had blasted them with noise. A part of me had suspected something like this, but having it confirmed changed everything. Tell me what happened, I said. Cyrus's eyes slid from mine.
Anya was the youngest of all of us when she became Calyptra. I don't know if that's why she lacked self-control, or if that was just the way she was back then. She was downright gluttonous. No matter how much anima she took, she always wanted more. Rebecca couldn't control her. Joanna, who was her best friend, couldn't convince her to try to curb her appetite. She was on a constant rampage. One day she went walking in the woods, culling life along the way. Her eyes were fully eclipsed when she came across a hiker. She told us she was too filled with anima to think straight. She saw him and decided he would tell other people about her eyes if he got the chance. She knew that could get the rest of us into trouble, get people asking questions. But I think the truth is that she just wanted to know what human anima was like, and there was no one around to stop her from finding out. So she culled him.
He paused and raked his fingers through his hair, agitated.
She was tortured afterward, he said. She realized she was out of control and decided not to take Anima anymore. But catharsis, after a lifetime of taking Anima whenever she wanted, was too much for her. She couldn't live with what she'd done, and she couldn't live without Anima. So she found another way to live.
As he spoke, the air seemed to vacate the space around me until I felt like I was suffocating. We were the same. All this time, my mom had understood exactly what I was going through, because she had been through it too. Only instead of locking herself up and waiting for catharsis to fade, she'd made a choice that nearly got her killed, had resulted in one sick child and one killer. I was quiet for so long that the fire went out, and we fell into dusk inside the shadows of the trees.
"Are you okay?" Cyrus asked.
I turned my eyes back to him. "I don't think I can forgive her," I said, though I doubted Cyrus would understand why. I climbed slowly to my feet, and Cyrus stood too, as though worried I might be about to do something crazy. And maybe I was. "I can't go home," I said. "But I can't stay here either. Not without Aaron. You have to tell me how to make her Calyptra."
"Canna," Cyrus said reasonably, holding up his hands in a woe gesture. "Even if Rebecca would agree to that, does your sister even want to be Calyptra?"
Just last night she'd asked me if she could accompany me to Eclipse, but I thought about her reaction to seeing me cull for the first time, her repulsion, and I knew the answer to Cyrus's question would be no. But I'd only culled the deer to heal her. She could be Calyptra and never take anything more substantial than a blade of grass if she didn't want to. And then she could be healthy and strong forever, independent of me. I didn't know if she would ever agree to it, but maybe that didn't matter. I was her sister, her twin. I always had her best interest in mind, and in this instance I knew what was best for her. "She wants to live," I told Cyrus. "This might be the only way." He kept shaking his head.
"I don't know.
At least tell me if it's possible." Reluctantly, he nodded.
"Rebecca knows how to do it. The question is, will she agree to it?"
"Maybe she will if you help me convince her."
"I'm not sure I'm convinced."
I knew it was manipulative, but I couldn't help myself. Once I got an idea in my head, once I began to obsess, I was like a stone falling from a great height, picking up speed as I went. I took a step, and that was it. We were kissing. It was nothing like my first kiss with Blake. There was no sweetness to the heat and hunger of our mouths. No sweetness at all. There was only need. I wanted Cyrus. I had already admitted that to myself. But now I needed him even more than I wanted him. There was nothing sweet about that.
"Yes. She has to say yes. She has to. She has to."
This thought rode a merry-go-round in my head as I paced the length of my room in Eclipse House. The kiss with Cyrus still burned on my lips like a pleasant brand, but its memory was overshadowed by my impatience to know Rebecca's answer. When we got back from the lake, Cyrus excused himself immediately to speak with Rebecca on the matter of making my sister one of us, while I holed up in my room to obsess privately. "She has to say yes. She has to say yes. Aaron is her granddaughter, too." The question was, on the off chance that Rebecca did agree to this crazy idea, how would I convince Aaron to take the plunge and leave behind everything she knew for a whole new way of living? And what about the rest of the Calyptra? Would they accept her if Rebecca told them to? With the exception of Joanna, they had accepted me quickly enough. Joanna. I reached into my jeans pocket, remembering the scrap of paper Joanna had pressed into my hand the previous night. A part of me wanted to tear it up and toss it into the fire in my little stove, but curiosity got the better of me. There was nothing Joanna could do or say to scare me away from Eclipse. Nothing. I held the paper up and read the three words she'd written. "In the guitar." And then I remembered what she told me the night Blake came to Eclipse to take me home, that there was something hidden inside my mom's guitar that she had expected me to find. My mom's guitar, which I'd begun to think of simply as mine, was where I'd left it, tucked safely beneath my bed. I brought it out and held it on my lap as I reached under the strings and into the sound hole, feeling around until my fingers caught the edge of something that had been stuck to the inside of the body. I pried it free and pulled out a folded square of paper about the size of a slice of bread. No wonder the guitar had always sounded a little off to me, no matter how often I tuned it. I unfolded the paper carefully. It was yellowed and brittle, but I managed to open it and lay it flat on my lap without tearing it. It was a topographical map, showing the mountains and valley in which Eclipse was situated. I'd never been good at reading maps, but this one had been marked up, which made it a lot easier. Eclipse was indicated with a crude drawing of a house with a circle drawn around it. A trail that stretched through the orchard and into the wooded foothills had been outlined. At the end of the trail was a large red X, and a note written in black ink. This is who we are. Chills ran up my spine, as prickly as spider legs. At the sound of approaching footsteps, I quickly refolded the map and jammed it back inside my mom's guitar. But I didn't have time to hide the guitar before Cyrus opened the door. I was still sitting on my bed with the guitar on my lap, an innocent expression plastered on my face. I stood and set the guitar on the bed, my lips going hot again at the memory of kissing Cyrus. As soon as my mouth had touched his, I'd known it was the wrong thing to do, that it was too soon for us. There was still so much I didn't know about him, and so much he didn't know about me. But at that point it was too late. I'd been so distraught over the things Cyrus had told me about my mom, and my determination to make Aaron Calyptra, that I hadn't been thinking clearly. If Blake knew what I'd done, that would be it. He would never forgive me. But if I wanted to become a permanent resident of Eclipse, I had to let him go. The thought made me ache inside, like some essential part of me was dying. Or maybe that was the ache for more anima. I'd taken plenty today on my hike with Cyrus, but none of it came close to satisfying my craving for more of what Rebecca had given us last night. And I'd been too distracted since we left the lake to cull anything more. Now the hunger opened wide in me, a sinkhole of desire. Was this how my mom had felt all of the time? Was this what had led her to killing a person to experience the life inside him? At least when I killed Jason Dunn, I'd known why I was doing it. Or had I? Had what he'd done to Clint Eastwood and her kittens only been an excuse? I tried to ignore the widening void and focus on Cyrus. His expression seemed deliberately blank. "Well," I said, growing impatient when he didn't speak. "What did she say?" "She said yes." Rebecca glided into the room behind Cyrus, barefoot as always, her feet barely seeming to touch the ground. She was stunning in a blue dress the color of a summer sky, fitted to the waist and then flaring out. The sleeves and hem were trimmed with silver beads that made a sound like falling rain when she moved. Her eyes went from me to the guitar on my bed, and back to me. But if she recognized the guitar as my mom, she didn't show it. "Are you serious?" I hadn't wanted to admit it to myself until now, but I'd been sure Rebecca would refuse my request. "If the only way to keep you here is to make your sister Calyptra, then yes," Rebecca said. "But you have to know, Kenna, that our gift comes with a price. An exchange is required. A sacrifice, if you will." She smiled. "But after what Cyrus told me, I think it's one you'll be willing to make." I looked at her askance, uncertainty creeping in. "What price?" Rebecca stepped up to me and touched my cheek. "Nothing you haven't paid before." Her palm felt charged, and as I looked into her eyes, I thought it strange that her pupils were so large. But then it was dim in the room. Only the glow from the stove lit the interior. Still, it was like she had no irises at all, only perfect circles of darkness surrounded by white, like the wing of an eclipse moth. Then a feeling like a spark popped on my cheek where Rebecca had touched me, and I felt a wave of effervescence, like my blood had been carbonated. I forgot about her possibly eclipsed eyes, about my kiss with Cyrus, about the map hidden inside my mom's guitar, even about Aaron becoming Calyptra. There was only me, and I was more than me. I was everything, and I was part of everything in existence, an expanding cloud of being. For the moment, my hunger was sated, and I was full. The night sped forward in an exhilarating blur of anima, enfolding me in color and sensation. Music crashed upon us in sonic waves that sank through our skin and vibrated our veins like guitar strings. Our bodies became electric as we danced, braiding our arms, fingers entwined like lace, weaving and unweaving, joining and searching and finding and holding. I had never been so happy, so alive, so me, and so not me. Things had never felt so right. Things had never been this right. Finally, I was where I belonged, and soon Aaron would be too, and it would be perfect. I was going to make her Calyptra. She was going to live a long, happy, glorious life, much longer than she'd ever thought possible, maybe even forever. Both of us eternal. The goodbye I couldn't say to her in the hospital would be wiped from the slate. I would never have to say goodbye. All I had to do was convince her to join me. Join us. This is who we are. I didn't want them to, but as the night wore on and my anima high dwindled, the words Joanna had scrawled on the map crept into my ears and repeated themselves again and again, demanding that I listen. I caught Joanna's black pearl eyes on me, small and watchful as ever, and I read the question in them. Did you find it? My mood darkened. What did she want me to do? Sneak off and follow the trail she'd drawn to the red X? This is who we are. Could I really ask Aaron to become Calyptra without attempting to find out who they really were? No, I decided. I could not. X marks the spot. I didn't sleep. I sat in my room, a small fire burning in my stove. I studied the map and tried to ignore the cavernous feeling that had set in once my anima high had worn off, and I'd become my mundane self again. Was I imagining it, or were my cravings getting worse? I thought back to the night's hazy events, an uneasy feeling heavy as lead in my stomach. I had been filled with anima tonight, and it had been the anima of something potent, but I didn't remember culling anything. What I did remember were Rebecca's bloated black pupils, that delicious shock when she touched my cheek, and then sublime abandon. Rebecca had given me anima, but she hadn't asked my permission. Looking back, I realized it wasn't the first time she'd done this. Rebecca was always touching me, stroking my hair, taking my hand, touching my cheeks, and on numerous occasions I'd felt that same surge of energy enter me, only it had been subtler those other times, too subtle for me to realize what she was doing. But why dose me with anima when I was perfectly happy to take it for myself as often as possible? Was she worried that I wouldn't take enough, that I would become dangerous again? Not dangerous to the other Calyptra, but to the land or the livestock. That had to be it. Later I would ask her, and I was pretty sure that would be the reason. She was my grandmother. She was looking out for me, taking care of me. There was a lantern in my room, and a book of matches for me to keep the fire lit. I folded the map and stuffed it in my back pocket, along with the book of matches, and then I crept from Eclipse House, the lantern swinging from my hand. I hurried across the yard toward the orchard. Once I was hidden from view by trees, I released a pent-up breath and lit the lantern. I didn't like this, didn't like sneaking around behind the Calyptra's backs, but there had to be a reason Joanna was so secretive. Whatever she wanted me to know, it must be something the rest of the Calyptra, or at least Rebecca, did not want me to know. But every family had secrets, didn't they? Mine certainly did. So who was I to judge? Following the trail on the map, I kept up a brisk pace, both to stay warm and to ensure I'd be able to reach the red X and make it back to Eclipse before anyone woke up. It was unnerving, walking through the woods at this time of morning, which, as far as light was concerned, was still night. The lantern provided only enough of a glow for me to see a few feet in front of me, so every rustle of leaves or snap of twigs or yip of a coyote made me walk a little faster until I was practically running. Still, the sun was coming up by the time I reached the clearing. I slowed to a halt, peering around for a moment before entering the circle of trees that surrounded a small grassy meadow, set against a craggy expanse of rock face. Inside the clearing, all of the forest sounds seemed to cease, and I felt as if I'd gone spontaneously deaf. I was reasonably sure I had arrived at the place the red X indicated, but I didn't know how to process what I was seeing, because I'd never before seen anything like it with my own eyes. In the center of the meadow was a rustic altar made from interwoven branches, and in front of the altar was a round stone pedestal, surrounded by the remains of charred firewood. The whole thing reminded me of something that might have been handy during a pagan ceremony or a ritual sacrifice. Rebecca's words echoed back to me. An exchange is required. A sacrifice, if you will. Was this the place where my sacrifice would be made? What was it that Rebecca would ask me to sacrifice?